Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled The Life-Changing Practice of Taking One Step Back by Lama Kathy Wesley. Sometimes we can feel helpless in the face of our bad habits. Like a hole in the middle of a well-worn sidewalk, we tend to trip on our discouragement and fall. But a simple practice we can learn on our meditation seat can help us step back from habitual pitfalls and improve our life and relationships. Sources include No Time to Lose by Pema Chodron. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Is Lama Kathy Wesley talking to you on behalf of Columbus Karmateksum Choling, Tibetan Buddhist Meditation Center in Columbus, Ohio. If you can see the stream on YouTube, or if you can see the stream on Facebook, please send a little message to us on either Facebook or on YouTube to let us know that you can see us. So I'm going to talk today about the topic, working with our mind, basically, is the topic. But the title of the presentation is the power of taking one step back. And for a lot of us, the last few weeks have been both exciting and a little bit scary, because I know a lot of us are just now coming out of a year of tension and stress and isolation with, with feelings of difficulty because of the pandemic. A lot of folks have been indoors essentially for about 15 months, and it's been really, really difficult and a very socially and emotionally isolating time. And so we have sort of this changing atmosphere in which people are beginning to come out of themselves a little bit, and they're coming out into the world and society now that vaccines for the pandemic are available, and people are beginning to venture outward. They're going to shops, they're going to family events, they're hugging people, they're doing things that they couldn't do while they were in quarantine at home, protecting themselves and their loved ones from the COVID-19 virus. But now, with all of this return, there's this friction that I think is going on for a lot of people. I'm seeing in news stories, and I'm sure you've seen them also, about people beginning to act badly in public, where people are yelling at clerks and flight attendants and even getting violent with other people in public settings. And I think that what's happening is that there's been a lot of internalized feeling that we haven't had a chance to process about the pandemic, the sense of grief at having lost our opportunities to be together and see our loved ones and take care of our families. There's the sense of sort of terror that we went through, not knowing what caused the virus, and then finding out what caused the virus, and then what we had to do to combat it. There's just been a lot going on. And so the atmosphere is sort of charged in the world right now, and there's a lot of free-floating anxiety and anger. So when people come to us and they look angry, it's almost as though we instantly retreat to a defensive position and think, well, this is unfair. This person shouldn't have verbally attacked me or said these things or done these things. But by the same token, even though we've backed into a defensive position, part of us wants to engage and not back away from a fight. Especially when we sense that an injustice is occurring, either to us or to someone else. So when this sense of justice and injustice is at stake, we then begin to engage and actually get involved in fighting and get involved in conflict. And so there's a lot going on for us, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. But there is something that we can do to work with these feelings, these feelings of free-floating anxiety, these feelings of free-floating anger and resentment. There is something that we can do, and that is we can take one step back. We can take one step back from the situation and look at it head on, and then make a choice about our response. Now, I know that sounds virtually impossible, and to a certain extent, it is sort of impossible. And the reason for this is our human nature and our habit. As human beings, we're hardwired. I tell people we're hardwired for justice, and therefore we want to see justice done in all settings and all circumstances. And when we see an injustice happening, whether it's to us or to someone else, we want to fight back. But when we react in that way, when our, I guess you could call it our impulsive, knee-jerk reaction happens, we're not always at our best. And we are not always speaking from our deepest place of caring and love for ourselves and caring and love for other people. If we look at the teachings of the Buddha did address this. He said that we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts, we make our experience of the world. And he said that if we speak, think, and act with an impure mind, suffering follows us. With certainty. And this, and then if we think, speak, and act with a pure mind, happiness follows us with certainty. But, and he went on to explain that the dividing line between a pure and impure thought, word, and action is selfishness. The Buddha, in his teaching on the Four Noble Truths, said that grasping and fixation were the cause of suffering, the root cause of suffering, and that what we grasp toward and cling to the most is our sense of self, the idea of me or I. And so whenever the me or I, we perceive that the me or I is in trouble, then we then react. We have built up a habit of this knee-jerk reaction of immediately taking hold of what we perceive to be an injustice and reacting quickly. This is just how we have always done it. And so it's what we're used to. But as I've mentioned, it's not always the healthiest, because when we react out of habit, we react maybe from not the best place within us, not a place of training in love, not a place in training in compassion, but rather a place in training in anger and reactiveness. So being able to take one step back from that would be, I guess you could say, a heaven-sent relief. So, but how do we take one step back? How do we, in the midst of a difficult situation, take one step back? How do we do that? And I think that for many of us, the first time that we've been able to take one step back is when we learn the practice of mindfulness and learn the practice of meditation. Think about it. When you're sitting in meditation or doing mindfulness practice, whether you're sitting in a chair, sitting on the floor, walking meditation practice, what are you doing with your attention? What you're doing with your attention in meditation is you're training your attention. You're training your attention to be in the present moment. And for many of us, we learn breath awareness meditation as the method for bringing us back to the present moment. because the breath is portable, it's easy to use as an object of attention. And so when we sit on our meditation seat, we start with one deep breath and breathe out, and then allow our attention to rest on the breath as it comes in and goes out. And while doing this, we'll find that we have a short moment of attention that's followed by a period of wandering, where we wander into the past or wander into the future, or begin to analyze the present, like my head itches or whatever we think about. But the technique of meditation teaches us that when we have that moment of digression, or sometimes they call it discursiveness, where we begin to think about something, tell ourselves a story of some kind, if we are capable of noticing that we have wandered from the object of the breath, the object of attention, then what do? We stop. We can even label it as thinking. We consciously let go of the thought and then consciously return our attention to the breath for a fresh start. And each of these steps in the process, the placing of attention and the maintenance of attention, and then when our attention wanders, the noticing, labeling, dropping, and returning, each piece of this technique allows us, it actually is taking one step back. In other words, in meditation, we train our attention to be present. And we also train our attention to notice when we're not being present, and then to consciously usher our attention back to the breath for a fresh start. And what that means is that for many of us is the first time that we have ever, ever taken one step back from our thoughts. But that's what happens. When we are meditating and training our attention, we notice when we're not being attentive. And going into a story, the one I generally use when I'm teaching meditation, the story that I generally use is the sound of a car door slamming outside your home. You'll hear that and you'll say, huh, sound of a car door or car door. And then you just go back immediately to the technique of observing or being attentive to the breath. But then you could, when you hear that car door, make the mistake of wandering into a story about the car, such as, is that my neighbor? Is he parking in my space again? I'll show him. Anyway, so you see what I'm saying is that often, a simple thought is not a simple thought, but it becomes the first link in a chain of thoughts. One thought chains on another, chains on another, chains on another, chains on another. And the next thing you know, you've told yourself a story about what's going on. But being able to take that one step back while we're on the meditation seat trains us in a different reaction. It trains us not to have a knee-jerk reaction. It trains us to be quietly present with whatever is going on. That being quietly present is a way of, that being quietly present is a way of doing what I'm talking about, that taking one step back. That being quietly present gives us an alternative to the knee-jerk reaction. In other words, we don't have to react. We can actually just be present and observe. Recently, I was watching a television program about where someone was explaining about how to calm oneself down. And when people get angry and excited, and the words came up, we need to be more curious than judgmental. What a great phrase. We need to be more curious than judgmental. That's about disengagement. In a way, we are disengaging from the stories that we are telling ourselves about what is happening in order to be more quietly present with another person. So you can see that this little skill of taking one step back from the story that we are telling ourselves about what's going on is a valuable thing. It gives us time. It gives us space. It gives us a moment of internal de-stressing and relaxation so that we can make a more considered choice about what we're going to say or do next. Let's use the example of sitting in meditation and hearing that car door slam. Let's go back to that for a second. I'm sitting in meditation. I hear the car door slam, and then I make the mistake of pursuing that into a story. And I say, oh, I'm so mad at my neighbor. They're parking in my space. But at the moment that I recognize that I'm telling myself a story and that I'm no longer being present with the breath, if at that moment I can label that thought, thinking, let go of it, and then return my attention to the breath, what I've done is I've taken hold of the narrative. I've taken hold of my own power in the situation. I am no longer tethered to or bound by reactiveness. And so I have some strength that I perhaps didn't even know I had. So if we expand outward from the topic and talk about ourselves when we're not trying to meditate, think about what it's like for us to be walking down the street and seeing somebody arguing and feeling, oh, that other person is being unfairly treated. I'm so angry about this. We also could at that moment take a breath and have that breath center us and allow us to disengage from the knee-jerk reaction and be quietly present for a second. When we do that, we can see the situation more clearly. We can see that these two people are both suffering. It's not just that the person who is coming at the other person as an aggressor, it's not just that the victim is of that aggression is suffering, but the person who is causing the aggression, the person who is showing the aggression is also suffering. And so finding a way to be curious rather than judgmental is to say both of these people have thoughts and feelings, and we need to find a way to work with both of them. Now, of course, there will always be situations that where there's a true and immediate danger. I'm not talking about those situations, because in the situation of true physical harm and danger, of course, we have to do what we can to protect others to the extent that we're capable. My teacher, Kempo Karthar Rinpoche, once said, in answer to a question about what do you do if you see two people physically fighting, he said, look, if you're an expert in martial arts, you can go and get in between them and separate them. He said, but other than that, he said, you have to back up and recognize your limitations. Perhaps the next thing you do is call another responsible person, or call the police, or do something that short of involving yourself because you're not physically capable of sorting out the situation. And he said, but if you're not even capable of that, if your fears are coming up for you and you don't feel prepared to intervene in any of those ways, he said, you can definitely hold a mind of love, compassion, equanimity, both for the person who is receiving the harm and the person who's handing it out. So in other words, we have to feel love and compassion for both people in a dispute, or we're not doing justice to the situation. Because people do not become aggressors because they're evil. People become aggressors because they have been treated badly in the past, and this is how they chose to react. And so for all of us, it's hard to see this, and for all of us, it's hard to confront this in ourselves and hard to confront it in others. But the practice of meditation helps us to understand our own flaws, our own feelings, our own difficulties, and to find ways to, I guess you could say, be curious about our own foibles rather than being judgmental. So going back to the topic of taking that step back, in Tibetan Buddhism, there are a number of ways of working with the mind. And I'm going to put on my screen below, there we go, three methods of working with difficulties: stepping back, transformation, and transmutation. So I'm going to talk about this for the next few minutes. In the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, we practice three different styles of Buddhist practice. We practice basic quiet sitting meditation, we practice compassion meditation, and we practice mantra meditation. And then these three styles of practice, basic sitting, compassion meditation, and then I should say more than mantra meditation, we also practice something called Mahamudra, which is a deep and penetrating insight meditation. So we practice these three styles of practice. But each one of them relies on that ability to take one step back in any situation. Because when we are engaged with a story that we're telling ourselves, like this is bad, or this is good, or this person is bad, or this person is good, whenever we're involved in a story, we're not being present in the situation. And we could then react out of habit in a way that's not helpful for ourselves and not helpful for others. So the quiet sitting meditation practice, where we take that one step back from our story, and by the way, when we take that one step back from our story, it tends to disappear, which tells you a little bit about how that thought always was. It wasn't that the moment we saw that we were thinking that the thought somehow becomes empty and disappears. It's that it always was that way, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to look at it and watch as it disappears. So that teaches us something about the nature of our mind, that from day to day, minute to minute, hour to hour, is moving like a stream. And as our thoughts, feelings, and emotions move like a stream, they're always changing. They're always and continuously changing. And if we can begin to recognize that and to begin to work with that, then we'll be able to be more true to ourselves and to be able to act instead of react. So let's go to the first method of disengagement. The first method of disengagement happens when we recognize that we're experiencing a negative mental affliction, such as anger or reactiveness or jealousy or competitiveness or any of the many mental afflictions based on selfishness that we can experience in a given day. If the moment we recognize that we're feeling that way, which takes time, we may not be able to do it right away, but over time we can. The more we do it on our cushion, the more we're going to be able to do it when we're not on our cushion. The minute we recognize what we're feeling, if we can identify it, this will help. I am feeling angry, or I am feeling tired, or I am feeling impatient, or if we can identify it, then we can take that one step back, take a breath, make that breath our one step back, and then look at the situation again, hopefully with more clarity. By disengaging from the story and being present, we are able sometimes to cut the continuity of a bad habit. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But for many people, being able to take that deep breath, take one step back, and in some cases, turn totally away from one's own reactiveness by walking away from an argument that someone is trying to pick with you, and then you just turn and walk away from it. That disengagement prevents us from strengthening the habit of reactiveness and making that stronger. So that's the first method. Second method is the transformation. This comes from the Buddhist teaching on Lojong, or mind training. Once we've trained our attention and we begin to see that we can change our moment-to-moment thoughts, we need to have some moment-to-moment thoughts that are healthy put into the mix. And so in the eight stanzas of thought transformation, Langri Tangpa, a Tibetan teacher, says that when we feel something, if we can take the attention off of ourselves and our story and put it on other people, this can help us be less selfish. So for example, if we are happy, we can imagine, instead of holding all that happiness for ourselves, which would make us susceptible to being angry if somebody tries to burst our bubble, we would mentally imagine that we give that happiness away to all sentient beings. By feeling our happiness and not being carried away by it, we imagine that we share it with others. And in that way, we transform the happiness into something that is more kind, loving, and open for others. Second, let's say we're feeling impatient or angry. If we recognize it, label it, it's impatience or it's anger, and then we think about other beings and imagine that we take on all of their anger in the anger that we're feeling. And in letting that go, may we make the aspiration, may we and all beings be free from anger. So the great 12th century Saint Shakyashri said, when I am happy, let my happiness flow to others. May its merit fill the sky. And when I am unhappy, may the sorrows of all beings be mine. May the ocean of suffering run dry. So in this way, Langri Tangpa and others who wrote books about Lojong mind training said, we strengthen our love and we strengthen our compassion by thinking of others before we think of ourselves. And in that way, we can practice transformation. In other words, instead of always only ever thinking me, 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 we add the thought, may everything I do be of benefit to beings. That's called the bodhisattva commitment, or the mind of bodhi, which means awakening, citta, the mind of awakening, bodhi citta. And when we can think about others, that changes our internal narrative from just being about me, 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 to being about us as sentient beings, us as a community of sentient beings. And by doing that, the selfishness, that impure mind that leads to negative action, is quieted. And in fact, when we use this technique, we can actually transform our negative mental affliction into an aspiration. It's a form of emotional and spiritual alchemy to take our negative thoughts and by processing them in this way to imagine that we are giving happiness to others and imagine that we're taking on their suffering, we actually transform our situation. But that's the second method, transforming our mental afflictions through the practice of love and compassion. Now, third method, which is to use the techniques of Mahamudra or mantra meditation. Let's start with mantra meditation. Those of you who are familiar with our practices at Columbus KTC know that every Tuesday evening, we practice a chant of the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum. The mantra is a form of the name of the Bodhisattva, whose name is Avalokiteshvara in Sanskrit, and it is Chenrezig in Tibetan. So every Tuesday evening at 7 p.m., we're on Zoom, practicing the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum. And as part of that, we're encouraged to imagine that while we're reciting it, that we have a body that's made of light and is glowing and empty inside, and that we are Chenrezig, the Bodhisattva of compassion. And I guess you could say that it's not necessarily a transformation of our mental affliction when we take that one step back and think, I am Chenrezig. That's our alternative. When we become a Chenrezig practitioner, we can actually imagine that we are Chenrezig in the moment we're feeling happy or sad. We can actually, in that moment, once we've trained in this way, take that one step back from our story, that one step back from our thoughts. And taking that one step back, we can then choose to do something different, which in this case is, instead of being angry, imagine that we are in the form of the Bodhisattva of love and compassion, Chenrezig. And we're thinking, may I be of benefit to everybody in this situation, which is better than thinking, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and so on and so forth. So we've actually transmuted the energy of anger into the energy of awakening. We've awakened to the true nature of all thought, which is emptiness and clarity. And that takes us to the final of the second half of the third method, which is the practice of Mahamudra. Those of you who are familiar with our center know that karma in our name refers to the Karma Kagyu tradition of Tibetan Buddhism, which is one of many, many traditions of Tibetan Buddhism. And the main practice that we do is called Mahamudra meditation. And in Mahamudra meditation, we take mind itself as the object. At first, we do breath awareness techniques, just like in regular shamatha or calm abiding practices. But then after we calm the mind, we begin to look at the mind itself and examine the mind itself as the object of our meditation. And by doing this, we have a breakthrough at some point, and maybe not instantly, but over time, we have a breakthrough recognizing the basic nature of our mind as empty luminosity, which is the same as the basic nature of all thought, which is empty luminosity, which is the basic nature of all things, which is empty luminosity. And so in this way, when we feel a mental affliction, if we look deeply inside it, we can see there's nothing there. And seeing that there's nothing there, we have a moment of relaxation that is also deepening our certainty in the nature of mind and the nature of everything. So in this way, we can use that capacity to take one step back, to take one step back from the story and engage one of these three methods for working with difficulties: disengagement, transformation, and transmutation. So in any case, I wanted to introduce those topics to you today, and to give you an idea of how we as Buddhist practitioners are trying to take one step back. And in taking one step back, we try to accomplish goodness. So what I'd like to do here is take a moment and see if anybody in the chat, either on YouTube or on Facebook, has any questions about this one step back, or if you have an experience of your own of stepping one step back, you can do that. You can ask about that. But meanwhile, I want to say a couple of things about what we can take away from this practice. So if you have questions, you can type them in chat, but I'm going to do a quick summary now of what we can take away from this talk and what we can do in our everyday life. I think the first thing to recognize is that we're human and we all react because we have lots and lots of habits. We could look at our habits as being as old as we are. I'm 60 something, so I can say that I've been doing my particular habits of reaction for more than 60 years. But if we look at Buddha's teaching, the Buddha said that we all all of us have existed from the no beginning of time, and that will continue to exist to the no ending of time. So if you look at it from the idea of past lives, my goodness, we've been doing the same habits of selfishness forever and ever and ever and ever. But this life, according to the teachings of the Buddha, is where we get to make the choice to make a change. And that's why this life is powerful. This life is very powerful because we have the option to make a change. And so we all have patterns of reaction, and it's important to us that we learn what those patterns are. Kempo Karthar Rinpoche, in his book, Dharma Path, said you can make a list of your worst habits and reactions and then start working on them one by one, like a cosmic to-do list. So everybody has that. So that's one thing to take away. And number two, we don't have to continue our habits. And that's the second thing I'd like for you to take away, which is that if in the practice of quiet sitting meditation, we can let go of one thought and see it disappear, and when we're sitting and meditating, if we can let go of one thought, that means we can potentially let go of any thought. And that capacity to let go of a thought gives us a chance to take one step back and to step outside the story of what we think is happening in any given situation. It is completely allowed and completely possible. And it actually happens accidentally sometimes. I forgot about this. I forgot to mention this example. I was giving a talk one time about anger, and somebody said, I can't imagine changing my habits of reaction. I just can't imagine it. And I said, well, you know, interestingly enough, I said, we've already done it at least once. And they're all looking at me like, how did I let go of anger? Well, here's how it works. If we're having an argument with someone, let's just pretend I'm looking. Oh yeah. Okay. I was looking for my prop. If we're having an argument with someone and then suddenly, ding, 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 our cell phone rings, we have this moment of indecision. We don't know whether to continue the argument because we think we're winning or we want to win or answer the phone. And the moment we decide to answer the phone and we take that phone and we go, oh, hi, and we're talking to our friend, we've let go of the anger in that instant and become somebody different the instant we answered that phone. And so we've done it by accident before. So now we can do it purposefully. We can take that one step back. But we need to build within ourselves the aspiration to make that change. Kempo Karthar Rinpoche said, if you're trying to tame your mental afflictions, you should wake up every day and say, with your opening prayers in the morning, you should say, today I will tame my reactiveness. Today I'm going to tame it. So that sets the theme for your day, that you're going to work to tame your mental afflictions and your reactiveness. And so having that opportunity every morning to push yourself into your day by saying, today I will tame my reactiveness, is a really great way to make yourself aware of it during the day. And then when you feel the reactiveness, and some people say, well, how will I know? Usually there's a physical component to our mental afflictions. We'll feel tense, or we'll feel hot, or we'll feel cold, or we'll start to shiver. So our bodies will cue us that something is happening. And then what we can do at that moment is that will key us into action, which is taking one step back and taking a breath. So if we start in the morning by saying, today I'm going to tame my mental afflictions, then when they come up, you might miss a bunch of them, but you might catch one. And if you catch one and then just stop and take a deep breath, breathe out, and then look at the situation again. Sometimes that's all it takes to pivot. Sometimes it confuses people. Like if you're in an argument with them and you take that deep breath and step back and then come at it from a place of curiosity rather than a situation of judgment. Like, okay, I'm curious as to why you feel this way. What's going on with you? And so forth and so on. It's better than saying you're a bad person and I'm going to show you. So if we can take that one step back, take a breath, and then change how we respond, that would be great. But for some folks, the only thing they can do is say, I can't talk about this now. I'm too angry, but I want to come back to it later. And then you end the conversation. And then hopefully you actually do get back to them later. And when you've had a chance to cool down and to think about another way to approach the situation. So in any case, that's the second thing that I'd like for you to take away, which is that you can begin to make a change. We all have patterns of reactiveness, but we can begin to make a change by noticing, by making that aspiration in the morning, noticing what we're doing, and then taking the step back and engaging in one of these three methods. Stepping back, taking that breath, or imagining that we take on the sufferings of beings or give away our goodness. Or we can imagine for a moment that we are in the presence of an enlightened being like the Buddha or Chenrezig, and think about that. And then lastly, looking into the nature of our anger and difficulty itself. So those are the techniques that hopefully that you can take away today. Before we wrap up, I will take a look now at the chat and see if there's any questions that have come from our friends on Facebook and YouTube. A person asks the question, what's the best way to regain your composure when we get angry? Don't want to let anger control us or be reactionary. I think that once a person is angry, Kimpa Rinpoche said, sometimes you can catch it before you say something, but he said that's not always going to happen because we're quite used to being overpowered by our anger. And so since we're used to it, it's going to be a difficult thing. One of the things you can still do, even after you've lost your temper, is to actually stop and take that deep breath, to stop and take a deep breath and then breathe out. Maybe you'll have to do it twice. Maybe you have to do it three times in order to just disengage. I think the main thing is to disengage from the story as fast as possible and disengage from the story of, well, that person just said this to me and therefore this has to happen or that has to happen and so on in order for me to neutralize the threat that I perceive. So in any case, I'm hoping that that's helpful. The best way to regain your composure is, again, to step back, take a deep breath, and then to use one of the other techniques, such as the mind training or Lojong technique called Tong Len. Tong means to send and Len means to take. And so if you're feeling anger, you can take and think that that your anger contains the anger of all beings. And then by doing that, you turn your anger into an aspiration. It's like you've taken clay and created something ugly with it. And then not liking the ugly thing that you've created, you smush the clay back together and make it into something beautiful. It's still and that's essentially what we're doing with the energy of anger, is that we're taking that energy, pulling it back, reconfiguring it, and turning it into an aspiration. May I and all beings be free from anger, and may I and all beings come to happiness. So I hope that helps. Very funny. Yeah, that one person says another thing is to not get into arguments with people who aren't intelligent. No. It could be that when we get angry, we're the ones that aren't being intelligent. Let's see here. Oh, that's a good one. A person has shared that this person says that what they do when they get angry is they imagine that their teacher, Kempo Karth Rinpoche, is standing right there watching me behave badly. It's startling and helpful. I do lots of confessing. In fact, that is a very good thing to do. Kemp Rinpoche said, if you start your day saying, today I'm going to not do something bad, and at the end of the day, you actually go back and say, how did I do today? The great masters of the Lojong tradition would have a bowl on their practice table, and then a pile of stones, and they would put a stone in the bowl every time for every negative thing they did. And then they would kind of see how at the end of the day they did. And they would actually then think they were in the presence of not just the Buddha Shakyamuni, but 35 different Buddhas, and name them all and confess to all of those Buddhas, okay, I had a bad day, but I'm going to do better tomorrow. Because that is the Buddhist practice of confession. It's you rely on the Buddha as your witness. You recall and regret the wrongs you've done, like the bowl example. And then you resolve not to do them again. And you take the remedy of reciting prayers and mantras to help counteract the negativity. So I can definitely understand. In fact, I had another friend tell me that that's what they did, that when we start to lose our temper, they actually imagine their teacher was present and how the teacher would see them. And that made them change their behavior. So I like that. Thank you for reminding me of that one. Let's see if there's any other questions coming up in chat today. Okay, I'm not seeing any more questions in chat. So I'm going to tell you a couple of things that are coming up and let you know that as of yesterday, we're planning to do a Bodhisattva vow ceremony outdoors. Columbus KTC is planning a Bodhisattva vow ceremony for Saturday, July the 10th, 2021. And you'll see information about it on our Eventbrite. And also on our website and also in the newsletter next week. So you can sign up for that and join in. Somebody said, do I have to be perfect to take the Bodhisattva vow? And the answer is no. In fact, it's a vow of training, not a vow that you're instantly perfect. So it's really much better if you're a flawed human being and are willing to train yourself with daily maintenance of the Bodhisattva vow. It's great to be able to practice it and renew it morning and evening in order to help us to bring our behavior more in line with what the Buddha had in mind. So we're going to be doing that. And I also want to let you know that next week I'm going to do something different. I'm going to give an extra Dharma talk this month, and it's next Sunday. And so I want you to start thinking about questions that you might want to ask me. I'm going to type this into chat next Sunday. Ask the Lama. So you can type up questions here. And then I will answer as many questions as I can for the entire 45 minutes next week. So there you go. So next Sunday, ask the Lama, type up questions, and I will try to answer them. So I'm looking forward to doing that. I haven't done one of those for a while, but I'm looking forward to finding out what's on your mind and the kinds of things you'd like to know. So that brings us to our conclusion for today, which is we can think that we mentally dedicate the goodness of this session to all sentient beings, that we also dedicate this, that we will be able to take one step back from our story at least once this week. We'll make a promise. At least once this week, we'll step back from our story, engage love and compassion, or look at our minds, or do mantra instead, and that we will dedicate this effort to all sentient beings. All recite a short dedication of merit prayer in English. Through this merit, may all achieve the omniscience of Buddhahood. May it defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may we free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Thanks to all of you for being here today. It's wonderful to see you, and I look forward to seeing you again next week. So in the meantime, try to meditate during the week, do a few little sessions, and try to work with your mental afflictions, and then let's talk next week to see how it's all gone for us. Take good care, everyone. I'll see you again soon. Om Mani Padme Hum.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.